CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. 8,500 troops, the latest information. According to London, reporting on the U.S. decision, the United States has placed 8,500 troops on, quote, heightened alert over the Ukraine standoff, warning that Russia has, quote, no intention right now of de-escalating. Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby said no final decision made on deployments, that the order is about ensuring that the U.S. is ready to respond if NATO decides to deploy its response force. Joining me, Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy aviator retired, of senior fellow of the Sagamore Institute, who wrote presciently recently in the National Review Online about the capabilities of the U.S. reinforcing NATO in the event of a catastrophe. Jerry, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. 8,500 troops. The earlier presentation of what the White House was thinking about mentioned 5,000 troops. Is there any meaning to the change of numbers and this language heightened alert? What does it mean, Jerry? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John, and it's great to be with you again. I think that that initial 5,000 number actually represented the Armored Brigade Combat Team that was scheduled to go to Europe later this year on a rotational basis to exercise with our Eastern European allies in the Baltics as well as in Poland. So there was an element, a brigade combat team from the 4th Infantry Division that the Army announced last year would be rotating to Europe this year. I believe that that rotation is probably being accelerated, that brigade combat team, armored brigade combat team, is being accelerated in its readiness. Now, what will happen is that brigade combat team will be flown to Europe and then will, as we say, fall in on pre-positioned stocks of tanks and armored vehicles and Humvees and so on there. We have approximately 2,000 vehicles to include 85 M1 Abrams main battle tanks that are already in warehouses being maintained in Europe. And that brigade combat team, armored brigade combat team, will be flown to Europe and then will mount up on that equipment if need be, and so ordered by the commander-in-chief, the president. Now, the additional 3,500 probably represents an airborne alert infantry team, probably elements of the 82nd Airborne that would be alerted and then again flown to Europe, where it would fall in on light infantry vehicles, so Humvees and Bradley fighting vehicles and so on, that it will then maneuver around in Europe. That's your immediate alert capability from the United States Army here, since the fact is we no longer have permanently stationed armored units in Europe, having exited Europe in 2014 during the Obama administration, bringing our last units home. So this is probably the quickest that we can get with the heaviest amount that we can get to Europe in sort of a reasonable time.
The landscape, Jerry, from the Baltic Sea to the Black Sea, going through what you'd have to say are a number of sovereign states, and reinforcing is not obvious to me. So 8,500 troops, two brigades, over this scale, it must involve also naval units. And you have written of the U.S. capability of providing naval units in the event of a catastrophe. So let's turn to naval units. Do you expect that the Navy will be called upon to supplement these 8,500 going forward, given that we have no reason to believe that the deployment of Russian troops is going to abate soon? Is 8,500 a down payment on what will follow, and how will it follow?
So the answer would be yes, so far as ground combat elements sent to Europe. If Putin continues to escalate, then we'll probably see the commitment of additional armored brigades. But those armored brigades would have to be onloaded here in the United States, either from Fort Bliss or Texas, where the 1st Armored Division is, or perhaps some of the armored brigades that are attached to the other infantry divisions that are in the United States. It takes approximately 3 days to upload a division's worth of equipment. A division representing somewhere between 15 to 20,000 troops. And then it would be 3 to 4 days to cross the Atlantic Ocean. And that ocean may, in fact, be contested if Putin is serious. He's made significant investments in submarines, very quiet, very lethal submarines over the last 20 years. And then once those units get to Europe, it would take additional time to offload those and then transport them to the front. if we're forced to offload them in Belgium or France, it could take an additional 3 to 7 days to be able to truck those tanks in units by rail across Europe. And that would presuppose that Putin shuts down the Baltic Sea from his enclave in Kaliningrad with his long-range surface-to-surface missiles and surface-to-air missiles. So you can see this is becoming a very complex situation very quickly. But if Putin escalates, I would fully expect the United States to commit more forces to Europe.
And, Jerry, I don't ask about the Army. I'm going to concentrate on the Navy here. Does the Navy have the equipment to provide this ongoing flow, the long tail from North America to the continent of Western Europe and then east into the Eastern Europe? Can the Navy provide all of that, or is there some guessing work going on here?
I think there's a lot of guessing work going on here. We have the Harry S. Truman aircraft carrier strike group that's positioned right now in the eastern Mediterranean. So Secretary of Defense Austin moved that carrier there, or held it there actually a couple weeks ago as a signal to Putin at that point in time. The Truman was supposed to move on to the Arabian Gulf, but it's there in near the Aegean Sea right now with its escort ships. There's also 4 Arleigh Burke-class destroyers that are based out of Rota, Spain. And then, of course, we have the Atlantic Fleet that's in Norfolk, Virginia. The key difference now from the old days to the new days is in the Cold War period, we had over 105 frigates whose purpose was to really do convoy escort to help us establish sea control in the Atlantic Ocean. Of course, we have no frigates today. We're in the process of building a new class of frigates, the Constellation class, but we're not going to see the first of those ships for some years now. So we're going to be depending on our Burke-class destroyer and our aging Ticonderoga-class cruisers, as well as our submarines in the Atlantic, to try and surge out to establish control of that. Those also, in particular the submarines, would move into position because they carry Tomahawk strike missiles to operate probably from the Mediterranean to give additional strike potential to the air wing embarked on the Truman. This is all presupposing that things really escalate. But as you can see, this is a very increasingly complex conversation that's going on between us and Vladimir Putin and the Russians.
You have written discerningly about the challenge of reinforcing Europe with your colleague when you were at the Center for New American Security, Julie Smith. You did, I believe the technical term is tabletop, not war game, tabletop, about reinforcing Europe in the event of a catastrophe. At the time, Jerry, it was all kind of Tom Clancy, but now it's very factual with the expectation of U.S. forces going to Europe. So I learned from you there is a part of the ocean called the Iceland, UK, the Greenland, Iceland, UK gap, which doesn't pronounce very well, so I'm just going to leave it at that. Since you wrote that paper, have there been improvements in the ability to solve that gap, and given that the Russians sortie out of that gap, and has there been an answer to the fast transport ship that you raised at the time, that we didn't have one?
So we have done some organizational changes, so there are now standing forces in the Mediterranean, standing NATO naval forces in the Mediterranean, and we've also stood up a standing naval forces that's essentially near the North Sea that will look at NATO's northern as well as southern water boundaries. But so far as additional investments by NATO countries in things like frigates and submarines, we haven't seen the sharp uptick in those investments that Ambassador Smith and I made, those recommendations we made when we wrote that report some years ago. So we're more organized, but we're more organized around smaller naval forces. So we'll have to make better and more efficient use of what we have in the near term. But I'm certainly hoping that our NATO allies continue to increase their investments in surface ships like frigates, as well as long-range patrol aircraft like the P-8 that virtually every country in NATO is buying now for anti-submarine warfare. And then the other thing is ASW ships such as the towed array ships that we have out there. Those are the types of investments we need to make, as well as the large sort of merchant ships that we would use to transport forces between the United States and Canada, our other NATO ally, to Europe in the time of war.
Some days ago, you reported on a Severodvinsk-class attack submarine, which the Russians have spent 10 years designing and building, that it's a derivative of the Akula and Alpha class. These are Tom Clancy terms. This is pure Tom Clancy 20th century. The attack submarines who can seal the gap or make the gap very challenging to the U.S. Navy. I can't remember how to say that. These new attack submarines, are they deployed? Do the Russians have sufficient numbers to complicate the Navy's reinforcement plans?
So I have no confirmation that any of the Severnitsyn class submarines have been deployed. However, if they are, if it appears that the United States is coming over and that Russian Putin is intent on seizing portions of Ukraine, you can expect that he would flush his fast attack submarines from his North Atlantic bases to come out and essentially contest it. The U.S. gets very nervous about taking large amounts of troops and equipment across the Atlantic if we cannot assure ourselves that we have control of the Atlantic. And if Putin decides that he's going to get aggressive, that he's going to essentially declare war against the alliance and its interests, then you can bet that we will attempt to flood the Atlantic ourselves with not only our submarines, but also our destroyers, our anti-submarine warfare capable destroyers, in order to hunt those submarines down. So the Atlantic would once again become a contested area, much as it was during the Second World War, except with Russia as the aggressor this time rather than Germany.
I'm speaking to Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy aviator retired. He's a senior fellow at the Sagamore Institute, and we are entertaining a catastrophe, but it's at hand. The Prime Minister of Great Britain in these last hours has told his public that a lightning strike is possible against Kiev by the Russian forces deployed perhaps as close as 110 miles in Belarus. We certainly know that the negotiations, the diplomacy, has not proved fruitful at this moment. So when we come back, because Jerry speaks very carefully of the Navy's capabilities, we're also going to talk about the Navy's capabilities to reach the war zone, whether it's in the Baltic or the Black Sea basin, to reach the war zone with its supercarriers, with the squadrons on the supercarriers, and also with its warships, its Arleigh Burke-class destroyers in the Baltic Sea. We'll speak of the capabilities when we come back. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.